Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Kyle, what's the name of the show?
Knockouts and Three Counts.
Yes, sir. Knockouts and Three Counts. And for the first time in the Detroit Podcast Studios, we have all four members of the show.
Woo!
So let's go. Before we jump into what we're going to be doing today, let's get an introduction with everybody. I'm going to start to my left. Kev, tell everybody your name and your social media.
Did your mama love you this week? Or did you change your name?
She loves me very much.
go ahead. Tell everybody who you are and throw your social media out there, man.
Hey, everybody. My name is Kev. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at _ made in the '80s.
2 weeks in a row. All right.
Hot damn.
Man, that's like four. It's like three, four episodes in a row.
Yeah. Symmetry.
Continuity. I'ma love me.
Kyle.
Yes, I am Kyle, the other Kyle, as you'll be hearing.
this is Pepper Kyle.
Yes, Pepper Kyle. You can follow me on Facebook, Kyle J. Campbell, and Twitter and Instagram at Team Chaos, TEAMKAYOS.
Alrighty, and the other Kyle.
What's up, man? I'm the other Kyle, White Kyle. you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Detroit Knockout, at Detroit NOKOUT. It's all the same.
Alrighty, and I am Devin McKenzie. You can follow me on Twitter at Devin63. That's DEVINTHE63. You can follow me on Instagram at AllSteakNoSizzle. That's all one word. And why not hit me up on Facebook? Just type in Devin McKenzie. You'll see a tall black guy. That'll be me. All right.
No, actually, there's another one. I accidentally looked somebody else up the other day when I was looking for your page to look for one of the All Steak No Sizzles. There's another Devin McKenzie, exact same spelling, tall guy, but he's white.
Why is he got to be white?
Why we got to make it about race, man? Come on.
You racist prick.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just say this is an honor for me. We have a very special guest on this week's episode. You know what, Kyle? This is your friend. I'm gonna let you make the introduction, man.
So in the studio with us, man, we got a guy that is like a brother to me, one of my teammates, one of my good friends, UFC fighter, Miles the Fury Jury.
Yo,
welcome to the show, Miles. Man?
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and throw your social media to all the people, anything you have going on. If you're selling weed out the back of your car, you can do that.
You better watch
you
it.
You saw that.
No. No weed. Fury Jerry.
Okay, cocaine. All right.
Yeah, blow. A little blow.
These are all jokes, Dana. These are all jokes.
All jokes, Mr. White.
Go ahead, man. Throw your social media out there.
Fury Jerry Instagram, and then just Miles Fury Jerry Facebook, and Fury Jerry on Twitter. So.
All right. I know sponsors are big for UFC fighters. You got any sponsors you want to throw out there real quick? Or?
Nah, none right now.
Okay.
We're all looking for sponsors right now.
Yes, we are definitely looking for sponsors.
You ain't lying, bro.
If you like to sponsor Knockouts and Three Counts, make sure you
hit
us up.
Hit your boy up.
Probably the All Steak No Sizzle family.
Yes, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Make sure you check out my other podcast, All Steak No Sizzle. So there we go. All right. Like I said, honor to have you in here. Appreciate you doing the show, Miles.
No doubt, man.
We're going to be talking about MMA. Got a lot coming up this week. UFC 215 is coming up. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about your career a little bit. But before we jump into that, Ultimate Fighter. Ultimate Fighter just recently started back up with the ladies this time. You are an alumnus from the Ultimate Fighter, man.
Yeah. Two seasons.
So, yeah, talk to me about being on the Ultimate Fighter, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a crazy experience, man. You break down, like, what the show's about, being on it, you know, fighting a lot throughout 6 weeks and the camera in your face all the time. It's kind of like just a crazy overall event. And looking back on it, man, I learned a lot. It was, you know, tough show, but had a lot of rewards out of it, too. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to really say about it. It's kind of one of those things, man, you really don't know what I'm talking about until you actually go through it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it was just pretty crazy experience, one that I'll always remember.
Okay. I'm going to let the other guys jump in here, but I got one more quick question. Have you followed the UFC Contender Series that just recently started not too long ago?
Mm-hmm.
So you coming in, let's say you're not in the UFC, you're getting ready to start, you want to get into UFC. Which way would you go? Would you want to be on the Contender Series, or would you want to go through the Ultimate Fighter? I don't mean to cut you off, but kind of, you know, talk about what each opportunity, you know, offers someone that wants to get into the UFC.
I mean, from what I see, it seems like Ultimate Fighter has more perks. I think you will get more viewership and be able to build your name a little bit more, but I think it's a lot tougher than the Contender Series. I think Contender Series, you know, like, you have one good fight and they call you up and you could be in the UFC, you know, right after that. Like, the Ultimate Fighter, you got to be on that bitch for 6 weeks or 13 weeks, whatever, right, you know, it was. And after all that, you know, then usually you know, if you did good, you get a fight in the UFC. So, I don't know. It just depends what route somebody would want to take.
So, are you happy with the route that you take?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Okay. I mean, looking back, I mean, I was on the first season with the Fox. It was the only live season. It was 13 weeks instead of 6. Man, like, that's some stuff that, you know, not too many people ever get to do. So, I'm happy with the route, and I think I felt like I grew a lot from the show, and I had some crazy experiences, and I'm a lot tougher from it, so... Yeah, I'm good to go on that. I don't think I would do it again, but I'm good for where I'm at right now.
All right, Kyle, why don't you go ahead and jump in and throw something out there for Mr. Jury?
You know, now that you're now that you've kind of got your feet wet again at 145, man, just tell me, you know, I mean, I've been around for your whole journey, man, since I've known you since I was 16 years old now, man. I mean,
yeah,
I remember
a minute, man.
I remember watching you fight back at Royal Oak Music Theater, man, for like the first pro MMA fight they had here in Michigan that was legal. You know, so speaking of the Ultimate Fighter, you know, like, a lot of people know you were on it twice. You know, you were, if I'm right, weren't you Brock's number one pick on that one?
No, I wasn't his number one pick, but I was on Brock's team.
Yeah, because I thought I had remembered him saying that. But, yeah, you were on there for that one, and you had blown out your knee. And, like, what was the experience like having been on the show and then trying to get back there? Like, what was your thoughts when they called you for the second time?
I mean, that was a tough experience all around. And, I mean, honestly, I was just like, when I blew my knee out, I was kind of like, I'd never been injured before, and that was a huge opportunity taken away. So I was just kind of like, shit, I kind of wanted to just not fight again. You know what I'm saying? I was like, this sucks, but I sucked it up, man. And I kept training and I rehabbed my knee. And then, as soon as I was good to go training again and back 100%, I was like, I knew I was going to get back on the show, so when they called me, I was like, all right, here we are again. Let's rock and roll, you know?
So, like, leading up to that first season, like, you know, a lot of people don't know, or if they do, off of watching the countdowns and stuff like that, man, like, when you moved out there to Cali and, like, just picked up and were out with Jeremy Stevens and them, man, like, what was it like for you, man? Because I know you were struggling for a bit when you first got out there, man. Like, it's that's, like, a big transition to just up and move. Like, for somebody coming in the game, man, like, what was it like for you just up and leaving your family, your normal training partners, all that stuff? Like, what challenges did it bring? Like, what things do you think it helped you grow in? Like,
yeah, first things, man, I mean, coming up, you know, I'm born in Hazel Park, Michigan, and I grew up in, you know, around the Detroit area and,
yes,
and north. And, you know, and I mean, even Flint, man, my family, my mom and stuff like that live in Fenton, which is close to Flint. So, I mean, I've been around those. Those are the two biggest cities that influenced me. And, you know, I was young, man. Like, I mean, it was kind of cool moving to California because, I mean, I was 19. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to fight. I'm a young kid. I mean, I'm hungry. And then I moved to California and I'm living with Jeremy Stevens. You know what I'm saying? I was like, this shit was sweet. I mean, I loved it, man. It was definitely one of the craziest, funnest, coolest experiences in my life. And, you know, out there training, being away from the family and stuff like that, that was definitely tough, you know, and being broke and not having nothing, you know, moving out there with but, like, $20 and, like, my suitcase of just clothes. I mean, that stuff's tough, but, I mean, I take the good in with the bad while I was out there. You know, there's a lot of good times and there's a lot of bad times, but I feel like it all makes me a lot wiser. And I had some of the best times in San Diego, and I loved it, man. I love going back to San Diego still to this day, to be honest. I don't know if you guys ever been,
yeah,
but
oh, yeah, I used to go
pretty
twice
a year.
Dope, dude. I mean, San Diego's a shit, man. I mean, it's a nice
area. I used
nice
to go
area.
Out there twice a year. I love it out there, dude.
Yeah, man. I mean, but it's kind of I love Michigan though too, you know.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
I mean, the only thing Michigan's missing, I would say, is the ocean. I like the ocean. I like lakes too, but the ocean's like,
so speaking
at.
About that, like, how do you like now that you're splitting your, you know, you're splitting your time between Michigan and here and, you know, traveling out to train and stuff, like, how do you like that opposed to having just all your training in one spot?
I mean, there's good things and bad things about it. Overall, I love it right now, man. I get to I got a good balance in my life. You know, I got my son, so I get to spend time with him. I still got good training here in Michigan. And at the same time, you know, I still outsource my training. I still want to go to a big gym here and there. And, you know, I'll go to TriStar right now. And even I did my last camp training with Jeremy and bounced around some big gyms in California. So, I mean, right now I think it's awesome. You know, I feel like I'm staying kind of, you know, my roots, but at the same time still testing myself and getting out there learning new stuff. And it's pretty cool, man. I live a crazy life, but it's definitely the one for me, and it's pretty tight at the end of the day.
Well, let's get Kyle and Kevin involved in the show, man. You guys have any questions for you got any questions for UFC's Clinton own?
Questions, man.
What let you know? Because you said you started really going professional like around 19.
Yes.
What really led you to know that this was kind of like your calling? This was something that you really wanted to do.
So I started training martial arts. Just like I just fell in love with it. Like when I was 13, and I mean, I was just literally just training. I was doing like jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and taekwondo and stuff. And some guys were doing MMA fights in the jiu-jitsu class. They would come there and train and do some MMA, and I was still like, oh, that's cool, you know, like that's pretty cool, because they put everything together and they're testing themselves. It's like the realest shit you can do to simulate a fight, you know. And I thought that was like, that was pretty cool, because that's realistic. And it wasn't until I seen Tito Ortiz UFC 40, Tito Ortiz versus Ken Shamrock, number one.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I seen that fight, and I was like, damn. I was like, that was sweet. Like, Tito, the way the build-up to the fight, the entrances, the fight itself, I was just like, that's sweet, and I want to fight in the UFC. That was kind of where it really was like, all right, that's what I want to do. I knew I wanted to fight, but I knew that's where I was headed. Like, that's where I wanted to go.
Okay.
Was the process of trying to be a fighter was harder than you thought it would be?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I always say the three P's, like, and that's just being straight up real in this sport, man. If you want to be a fighter, you know, especially if you're starting with nothing, like almost all of us are, you know, pain, punishment, and poverty, man. You know, you better love pain, you better love punishment, and you better love poverty for a certain amount of time, because, I mean, that's all it is, man. You work your ass off, and you make peanuts. And even still to this day, I think MMA is one of the hardest sports to make money. You know, I think there's a lot of other good things you get out of it.
Right.
You know, it's a good spiritual experience. But as far as straight up, like if you're like, oh, I'm going to get an MMA because I want to make money, you're a dumbass. and
wrong business.
Yeah, man. You got to really love this stuff. You got to eat it. You got to sleep. You got to breathe it. And yeah, it's definitely a full attention thing.
How much longer do you, like, kind of want to do? Because you're in, like, your mid-20s.
Yep.
Do you want to do this when you're like 38, like Brock almost, like when you're late 30s? You still want to do it if you're on top?
I don't know. It's too hard for me to tell. I set a goal. I'm gonna fight till I'm 30, and then I'm gonna reevaluate that. So I'm gonna see how I feel, see how you know, mentally, emotionally, and how my body's holding up, and go from there.
Okay.
So we gotta get this man a title shot within 2 years.
Ah, right.
So. I got to be, you know, around for a lot of your rise before you got to the UFC. But for the people listening, you know, like before you were able to make it to the UFC and the fights you had coming up, whether it be King of the Cage or XCC or all that stuff, like what was the process like for you, you know, building your way up to get to the UFC? And like what were some notable fights that you think helped you get the eyes on you for it?
The process for the come up was just training, full training schedule. And, you know, taking fights, just whatever. You know, I came up a lot in King of the Cage, which was, you know, the biggest organization at the time, you know, besides UFC. And, I mean, honestly, it's like a resume, you know. Like, if you want a job, you go there and, you know, you show why you deserve the job, you know. So my record is basically my resume. It's like, damn, I'm 8-0. My last two guys were really good, and this is why I deserve a shot. So,
because the last guy you fought at King of the Cage back when you were still at 170, he was ranked, what was it, number two in the country outside of UFC? Because I remember watching, I forgot his name, but I remember watching him fight in Bellator too.
Sam Opreza?
Yeah. Sam's a stud, man. Yeah. I mean, 6'2", southpaw, big kid. And What was the question?
I just, like I said, I mean, like, you, because you said your last two fights were against bigger names. I was just saying.
Yeah,
remember,
oh, yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, he was a great opponent, you know what I mean? I think at the time he was, like, 4-5-0, and he still has, like, a pretty good record. So that was definitely, like, a good, you know, notch in the belt, and I think got me some good attention and stuff like that. It was right after that fight is when I went to the Ultimate Fighter, so...
So you brought up three P's, and one that kind of interests me was the poverty. Nah, so you're in the UFC, and you basically said it yourself, like, the money's not necessarily what you think it is coming into the UFC.
I'll put it like this, man. It's money with the UFC is – it can be – you can make 100-plus grand in one night. Like, the opportunity is there.
Right.
But nothing is given to you, man. Nothing. Like, it's literally like – a dog-eat-dog, like, scenario. It's like, you know, hey, dude, we're handing out three bones, and there's 12 of you guys on the card. You know, show us, you know, right. Who wants it the most type of stuff. And you know, that's the thing. You're taking a lot of risks, you know, as a fighter. Like, you know, you could make 100 grand in a night, and everybody can know your name the next day, or you could get knocked out, you know, on TV and right. make 8 grand.
Well, you know? Kind of reason why it kind of caught me is because I watched MSI MMA when it was still on. I saw you were on there with mm-hmm. Boss Rutten and Marwanello basically talking about kind of the pay structure as far as the Reebok deal goes.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of controversy about the Reebok deal. And now the company has been sold to another company. So you fought in the UFC before the sale and after the sale. Can you tell a difference in the company before they sold and now?
You know... I mean, the only difference is like, you know, select employees that were pretty big in my eyes aren't there anymore, you know, like Burt Watson.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like you cannot replace a Burt Watson. It's hard to do that. Yeah. They have some good guys working right now in the UFC and nothing against those guys. But, I mean, you know, is it the same as when Burt was there? No. I mean, that's just one example.
Right.
So I can see little changes. But at the same time, like – you got to understand this business is growing, and I understand, you know, a new owner's bought it, they own it, and they're making the rules and doing their thing. So, I mean, I expect changes, though, you know, right. So I try to take it personal.
Okay. Kyle, Kev, you got anything?
So what separates you from other fighters?
I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like I'm pretty unique, you know. I feel like I do my best not to, you know, to do what I feel like is the best in each situation. And I mean, I don't know. I'm just a very complete fighter. I feel like I'm highly intelligent, and I've been doing this shit for a while. I feel like I got the skills to beat anybody in the world, man. And I don't know. I'm just different than a lot of these guys. I would just say that.
Speaking of beating anybody in the world, who is somebody that you do want to face? Like, not so much a dream matchup, but somebody where you've seen his body of work and you think, okay, beating him would make me feel like a better fighter because I knew I took down somebody that was either on my level or possibly even a little better.
I don't know, man. Like, I've been fighting. I fight good guys all the time, and I always just say, I mean, my aim is always at the top. You know, that's where I'm looking. So whoever's got the belt, I would say, you know, okay. It would be who I want to fight. And obviously that changes all the time depending on who's got it at the time. So for me, it's always kind of looking at the top. But I just focus on myself getting better. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of shit that I can't control in this game. So just focus on doing what I do and enjoying this process. You know, it's a crazy game we play, but I do my best to enjoy it to the fullest.
What would you say for somebody that's listening right now that might not be too familiar with your work, if you want the quintessential Miles Fury Jury fight, which fight should they go look up?
Good question.
I don't know, man. It depends. You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you want? You want a submission? You know, do you want a 3-round beatdown? Do you want a knockout? Do you want a close fight that's technical? You know, I mean, it just depends on whoever's wants to see what Miles Jury is about. Because, I mean, I feel like that's one of the coolest things about me is, I mean, look at my resume. I can beat guys in every discipline, you know, ground, striking, and I continue to get better. So there's not one fight.
It's okay. I think, too, the jump out to me, man, and it leads into my question is, your fight with Michael Johnson was a good fight.
Yes,
because
sir.
I feel like leading into that fight, I remember distinctly how much Michael Johnson was almost downplaying, like, oh, this is like a step down for me kind of deal. And then you came in and dominated, and it was like a it was definitely a complete performance. And the other one for me was when you went to Japan and fought Gomi, because Gomi, man, that one
he's
was
a legend
big one.
Over there too.
That's a big name to do it in Japan and to knock him out. I mean, to me, that cements, okay, I'm here and I'm here to stay.
Yeah, I mean, I fought when I fought Michael, he was coming off a win over Tony Ferguson at the time. And he was on a 3-fight win streak and all that. So that was definitely like a huge test for me. That was like my first real original fight in the UFC, you know?
Right.
But so I mean that was special in a way that like I was really counted out. I think 3-1 underdog in that one. So that
bet.
Right. So that
made a lot of people happy that night.
Ah, for real. I had like when I came back to San Diego, I had like friends come up to me and be like, man. Yeah, I want money on you, bro. I was like, where's my cut?
Give me that bread, bro.
But I mean, that one was tight because that was kind of like really I was counted out, so that one felt special for that reason. When I fought Diego, that was tight because I remember partying in high school, man, and sitting on a couch like and watching the Ultimate Fighter finale with Diego and Kenny.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then Diego was coming off the fight too with Gilbert Melendez, fight of the year.
Yep.
So that was another crazy like experience for me because I was like, damn, that dude's tough. You know, you see that go watch the fight with Diego Sanchez and Gilbert Melendez, and then of course Gomi because that's. I grew up watching that guy, and to go to Japan and knock him out in Saitama Arena, that's like, that's another cool ass story from when I'm older.
Let me tell you about the time I knocked out.
Yeah, sit down, kids. My grandpa tell you about the time.
Let me ask you a question from a fan's perspective. I've been to quite a few fights, and I've been to the weigh-ins, the Q&As they have. They have like the fan villages at different events. How much is that an obligation for you guys, or is that something that you get like? I mean, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but is it you get extra money for that, or is that like a part of your deal, or is it something you just do?
It's both, you know. Sometimes you get paid for doing stuff, and other times it's just part of the requirements. So it's both.
So the question I have off of that is, how much of that is like? Actually genuinely wanting to do it, how much of it is kind of a burden? Because I know you guys probably have media obligations that you have to do. How does those media obligations become like a burden? And like if I could leave this part about the fight game alone, I would.
It's different for everybody. You know, everybody's opinion on that is different. I mean, you see a lot of guys nowadays where they really embrace that that camera and media type of aspect of the game. And, it just depends on the fighter. Myself... I don't really like it. I'm more introverted, to be honest. So I like I don't know, I'm not a big talker, you know what I'm saying? It's kinda where I come from is like, when you're talking a lot like that, it's kinda like you show weakness and I get it, you gotta sell tickets and you gotta put people in the seats and we're in a society right now that loves that drama shit. Like they really love like, he said this about this guy and did you see that picture that he posted about this dude and this girl? Like, what I'm saying? Like, it's cool. It's entertaining sometimes. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know, man. I just don't feel like I'm 13 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, why am I going to be on fucking Twitter telling this guy to, I'm going to beat his ass and I'm going to, he's this and he's that. It's like, dog, I'm going to see you in a cage. You know what I mean? Like, what more? It's like, do we need to do? So that's my take on it, but some people embrace that media role very well, and some people pull it off and do good and stuff like that. So that's just something I got to deal with in this game. Not everything in this game is going to be – I love every aspect about it, So I take the good in with the bad. And at the same time, I think it's an opportunity for myself to learn to, be a little more extroverted and to be – tell my side of the story a little more and, just tell the world kind of like what I'm seeing from my angle. And at the same time, it just doesn't have to be what everybody else does. I don't have to do it in a way where I'm going on Twitter bashing my opponent or talking shit about this guy or this girl or whatever. I just kind of try and keep it positive, you know.
Right.
Try and keep it keep it moving, keep it positive and stuff. So that's always my goal, and it doesn't always happen, but that's what I always try to shoot for.
Does the company kind of like not force you to kind of be like more social media conscious, or do they really just want you to be who you are? If you want to kind of play it up and, you know, talk a lot of shit on social media, or if they just want you to basically just come out and, you know, settle it, you know, in the cage?
They don't like tell you like, hey, we need you to say this or to do that or anything like that. Like, they want you to be yourself. So, you know, I think they don't tell you to do it, but at the same time, you're seeing guys get skipped over and guys get opportunities because they talk shit. So I think, you know, I mean, it's kind of like they don't come out and say it.
Chill said it. Excuse me.
But it's definitely like you see it. So,
Okay.
So another question I got, you know, you were talking about, you know, I know you real well. Like you mentioned, you're like real introverted. What was the experience like for you when you went and fought over there in Japan? Not only fighting a legend like that, but to be going overseas, to be fighting in a place you probably have never been before, new culture, new surroundings. Like what challenges did it bring? What things did you like from it? And like, what was the overall experience from? Because I remember, like you said, you know, everybody was talking about how much of an underdog you were going in against Gomi. I mean, I wonder what that experience is like. Because I mean, it's got to be way different than fighting here in the States.
Experience was cool, man. It was totally something different. You know, I just like chalk it up as like just living my life, man. Like, I mean, you know, who would have ever thought coming from basically the Detroit area and I'm, you know, 25 going to Tokyo, Japan for 10 days, you know, it's like,
right.
I just, you know, experienced it, man. I just, you know, whatever, we went walking around, went to shops, freaking, you know, doing, meeting fans, meeting people out there and, you know, just chopping it up with, you know, that type of culture and that type of environment. It was definitely awesome.
I mean, how was it being over there and getting recognized? Is it like
it was cool, man? They're
here.
Nah, I mean they're very very respectful, and they don't show like a lot of emotion. You know what I'm saying? Like for real. Like I had a buddy of mine was walking down like you know, where like the not the buses but the trains are, you know, when you get off the trains,
right,
underneath the ground. And there's so many people in Tokyo that, you know, everybody's kind of like, you know, bumping into each other when you're walking. And he was just like put on his turbo walkers, man, just like walking, was shoulder checking everybody, and everybody's flying out of the way getting shoulder checked, and nobody even turns around or says anything to him. There's just like no emotion, right? And I'm just like, damn, dude, like where I'm from, you get fucking shot. You go around, just, you know, shoulder checking. Imagine that guy in Detroit, like just fucking shoulder checking everybody walking down, like, you know.
See five people start crowding around, about five counting phones start coming out.
World star.
How did you get your nickname?
That's a good one, man.
I got my nickname just by my style. Like there's a minute there where I was just like blowing through people, like just on a furious pace. You know what I mean? Like just knocking people out and just beating them up pretty good, man. And it kind of just one of my buddies, my ex training partners was like, man, how about Miles Fury Jury? I remember we were driving to St. Louis at the time. He's like, Miles Fury Jury, and I was like, damn, that kind of sticks. And it was just simple, you know, Fury Jury. So
right. Good branding.
Yeah, man. It kind of just flowed together. And yeah, I mean, that's it.
So you told them that, like, when you said you were going to the fight, did you tell them that night that's how you wanted to be introduced?
Yeah, I just said, you know, they give you a sheet, put down your nickname. I just said Fury.
We get one more question from everybody, then we're going to jump into UFC 215 coming up and start breaking that down. So, Kyle, you go first.
My big question, man, is, like, again, you know, being able to like see you go from 170 to 155 and do real well at 155 and now come down to 145.
But you fought at 170?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm starting to call you Kenny Florian Jr. Well,
the first season of that first season of Ultimate Fighter. He was
That's right. That's right.
But you know, seeing you come from 170 to 155, now down to 45, you know, and being ranked pretty high up at 55, you know, in your first fight in 45, being in against Oliveira, now you're getting your footing back after that great win over De La Torre. How do you feel now that you're more acclimated to 45? Is there anybody like you're looking at in the 45 weight class, and like just how do you feel about that weight class as a whole?
I feel good. I feel like it's, you know, it's more work for myself because I got to, you know, get down an extra weight class. But I mean, I don't feel like anybody's gonna be bigger than me, and I feel like my style and my length, my range and stuff like that is, I'm a tough fight for anybody. So I feel good.
Cool.
Wait, what's your walking around weight?
Like, you know, between 70, 75.
Okay. All right. Kevin, Kyle?
Being that you are a professional fighter,
yes.
How do you feel about the McGregor-Mayweather fight? Do you think helped or hurt the sport as a whole? I mean, Conor is one of the biggest names out there that even a lay fan would probably know about. Mm-hmm. And then to have him cross sports pretty much and then still lose but put up a pretty good showing but still lose, do you think that might bring more eyes to your sport, or that may have kind of not illegitimized, but I mean, UFC is one of the fastest growing sports in the world, but do you think that maybe kind of was a detriment to your sport?
I feel like it definitely helped both sports. I feel like crossing over fans and you know, just an event and two of those fighters, like a Conor and a Floyd. I mean, come on, man. Like, name any other fight really in the history that's ever been like that. So, I mean, just getting so many eyes, I feel like it was good for MMA and boxing. And my take on the fight, man, I thought Conor McGregor did awesome. I thought he did really, really good, man. And, you know, you got to look at what my man is trying to do here. Like, he is literally – and this is Conor, like that's a dude that's in my weight class, right?
Right.
But as just, like, a fighter looking outward, looking in, like, A, you got to cheer for him because, you know, he's an MMA fighter. He's representing our sport. And B, like, I mean, he's putting himself out there trying to fight in his first boxing match ever the best fighter ever, Floyd Mayweather. You know what I'm saying? Granted, there's a couple of variables that came into play, like Floyd not fighting for a while, Floyd being a little older, that made the fight more interesting, you know, mm-hmm. and made people believe a little more that Conor is going to do better than he should on paper.
Right.
I feel like Conor did a really good job for what he had in front of him. I mean, a good job is – that's an understatement. You know what I'm saying? I feel like he fucking did a great job.
Yeah, he did. Went toe-to-toe with the best in the world, so.
Yeah, man, and I don't care what anybody says. I feel like he won easily 4 out of those 9 rounds.
I agree.
I agree completely.
I agree.
You know, he got the last 9th round and the 10th round, he was just, you know, gassed. Obviously gassed out and stuff. So he had 2 more rounds to go, and he's taking damage. Like, Floyd did his thing, man. Floyd definitely did his thing, but I mean I was like, damn, that shows not only is Conor going to the boxing and showing that, you know, an MMA fighter can hang in boxing, but he's going up against the best ever. I mean, my man's got Floyd's got wins over Canelo's, got wins over everybody, De La Hoya. Yeah. You know, everybody. So I mean, Conor has nothing to really lose in that event, that fight. And I feel like if any boxing fan or any MMA fan is gonna talk shit on Conor after that fight, like, you don't know what you're talking about, and you're a retard. Like for real. Like you're talking on shit that you don't know anything about. Like, so you just need to shut up.
Well,
for real. And I'm not – I'm being for real, because there's a lot of people in this sport. Like if there's something that goes down in the world and everybody's dropping opinions on it and I don't know much about it, I don't blurt out my opinion until I figure out, like,
right.
Maybe do a little research, or maybe kind of, like, you know, just before opening my mouth. And I feel like people that say that about Conor, like, oh, you know, like, he got wrecked and yada yada. It's like, dude, no, obviously dude. You don't know what Floyd is. You don't know what Floyd's accomplished. You don't know,
right.
You know, how crazy of an attempt that is, and how much the odds were stacked against Conor. Mm-hmm. So it's just lack of education, in my opinion.
Not to mention, man, I got to say, I think that Conor brought out the best in Floyd. Because if you think about it, if you watch his most recent fights, Floyd's been mainly all defensive.
Mm-hmm. He made
Floyd come out and say, I have to come out and hurt him because mm-hmm. of all the talking that he's done, which is totally out of Floyd's normal game plan anymore. Maybe he came out that way in the beginning of his career, but in his recent fights, man, you haven't seen him come out that way in a minute. Mm-hmm. And I think the way he came out – not only from the mental warfare part of it, which is a big aspect of the mm-hmm. game that people don't pay attention to,
mm-hmm.
but the mental warfare clear down to when they fought, man, just the fact that he pushed Floyd and made Floyd say, okay, shit, I gotta start hitting this dude, and I got to hit him with some clean shots, and had Floyd coming after him, which is something that doesn't normally happen. So in my opinion, I think Connor brought the best we've seen out of Floyd in quite a while.
That's why I said that couldn't have went to a decision.
And
if that went to a decision, that would have been a detriment to Floyd.
And, I mean, the thing people fail to realize, whether Connor landed the most clean of shots or not, he landed more punches than Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
Okay? Plain and simple.
By a long shot.
Cab, you got one more question, man?
Out of your professional career, what is your favorite fight?
Again, that kind of goes back to, like, what we were saying before. Like, I mean, my favorite fight ever, if I had to choose one, and you were like, dude, got to choose one, I would say my first win in the UFC. Okay. You know, 2012, June. I mean, that I was like, for real, going into that fight, like my goal was like to get a win in the UFC. That was it, man. Like I was like
Dana White looking at you.
That, like I don't know what I'm doing after that. Like granted, in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, I want to be a champion, all that. But right then, that was a target goal, right? I was like, get a fucking win in the UFC. And once I got that win in the UFC, I was just like, I was like, I can die a happy man. Like straight up, that was honestly like what I was thinking. So that was tight. That was my favorite fight.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and run through this 215 card. But real quick, 218 is going to be here in the city of Detroit, your hometown.
So. Yeah.
Little Caesars Arena.
Correct.
How good would it be for you to be on that card?
That would be awesome. That's the goal here. And, I mean, you know, like how – I don't know. It's just like, you know, hometown, it's like that's as cool as it could get. You know what I mean? Like I grew up here. It's kind of like full circle now. It's like the NBA. It's like a kid growing up in Detroit getting, you know, playing for the Pistons
right.
and then coming home. You know, and getting to play for the first time ever with the Pistons in his hometown.
Get that little bit of energy, extra energy.
Yeah, man. Again, that's like shit where it's like, that's a sweet ass story when I'm older, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, and to be in, you know, like, Caesars Arena too.
Yeah, brand new arena, man. And the best organization in the world, the best fighters in the world. And I feel like I'm one of the best, if not the best, to come out of Michigan. So, I mean, right. me getting the opportunity to fight on that card, for sure. I mean, that's a dream come true.
So you have any breaking news, any fight announcements, anything in the works?
No, I know my management's talking with UFC about the Detroit card, but no contracts, nothing like that yet.
Okay. So we'll look forward to that. It'd be nice to see you fight Connor there. I'll just put that out.
Right.
When I heard the same weight class, I didn't want to put nothing out.
I mean, you know, same. Connor, Max Holloway, Aldo. I'm just throwing
right, right.
But let's go ahead and take a look at this UFC 215 card. It's this weekend. It's taking place in Edmonton. We'll take a look at the main card, but a couple other fights that I wanted to throw out there real quick. Henry Cejudo versus Wilson Hayes, two guys that fought Mighty Mouse unsuccessfully, but they're going to be facing each other. Miles, let me get your take on this fight real quick. If you don't want to give a prediction, I understand.
Yeah. I think it's Henry Cejudo and Wilson. That's a tough fight for both guys. I mean, they're both very good. Henry, great wrestler, great boxer, and Wilson's good everywhere and, you know, specializes in jiu-jitsu. I could make a case for either or. I know Wilson and I've trained with Wilson for a while when I was in California.
Right.
Great dude. So I'll be rooting for him.
Okay. Kyle, you got a prediction on this one?
I don't really have a prediction as to who I think is going to win. I think watching Cejudo, man, it's been kind of funny because with him having that wrestling base, how much he's tried to bang.
Right.
In the UFC, like if you guys have noticed, like, you know, in a lot of his fights, I've noticed he's trying to bang a lot more when with his wrestling pedigree, you know, I figured he would be more trying to take guys down and just pound them out. But like Miles was saying, you know, I've watched a lot of Wilson Hayes' fights, too.
Yep.
And out of the opponents I've watched Mighty Mouse fight, you know, I thought Wilson Hayes was one of the better ones that he was going to fight. So if I have to pick one, I'll go with Wilson Hayes on that one.
Okay. One of your training partners, Mr. Jeremy Stevens is fighting Gilbert Melendez.
What up, though, heathen?
Now, I'm not sure if this is Gilbert's debut at 145.
But it is.
His first fight at 145. He's fighting a veteran at 145, Mr. Jeremy Stevens. I think I know where you're going with this.
yeah, man.
My knockout.
Hey, that's my boy. That's my big brother, man, Jeremy. And I mean, for sure, dude. I mean, it's a winnable fight for Jeremy on the feet, and Jeremy's gotten a lot better these last couple of years, and the guy's a savage. So, I mean, I'm predicting Jeremy winning. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I think Jeremy's going to whoop that ass.
Okay. Kevin or Kyle, you guys have
what do you guys think?
To be fair,
what do you guys think, Gilbert?
They're not necessarily the big UFC guys on the show. They're the wrestling guys, so... Kyle, you want to jump in on that?
All day, baby. That's where I'm going with that one, dude.
You know what? I'm going to be the contrary. I'm going with Gilbert, man.
Well, damn you, then.
That usually works out with your picks.
It do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wonder what the odds are on that fight, though. That's kind of a strange fight. You know, it's Gilbert's first fight, and Jeremy's been testing, fought everybody, and so has Gilbert. So I wonder who Vegas is trying to say.
So, quick question about that. So – Jeremy Stevens lost his last fight. Gilbert making his debut I know fighters really don't like to hear this word, but are they kind of making Jeremy kind of the gatekeeper of that division now?
No, I don't think so. I just think Jeremy's fought everybody, man. He's fought 24 times, you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
all right, give me somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Jeremy's been at that, you know, one fight away from a title shot, and he's been there a couple different times, and again, man, success, it has its own road. You know, it's different for everybody. And I know Jeremy's still, you know, aiming for that top spot and that success. So, I mean, I have faith in my man, and I feel like, you know, a win over Gilbert puts him back again in top five. You know, gets him back in that picture, close to that title.
And just for the record, since Miles doesn't know, but everybody else that's listened to our show does know, Devin always wants to be the contrarian, but the last I checked, that didn't work so good for you.
So next fight, we have.
Let's bring that up.
No, let's bring that up.
No, we'll bring that up during the wrestling part because we got a few minutes. We'll run through this real quick.
Because he lost the bet, and now his ass has got to get wet.
No, we got a few minutes before break. Let's run through these. We're not going to talk about Latifi, I can't say his first name, versus Tyson Pedro. I'm looking forward to that fight, though. Neil Magny versus Rafael Dos Anjos. I think that's going to be a really good fight. Miles, what you think?
That's another weird one. You know, you got Dos Anjos, who's like 5'7", and I think Magny's like 6'1", 6'2".
6'3".
6'3", shit, man. So it's a definitely tall guy versus short guy.
And it's at 170, too. That's
I don't know, man. I didn't see Dos Anjos' last fight, and I didn't see Magny's last fight. So if I had to say something right now, I would say Magny, you know? But
okay.
I hate saying picking fighters when I haven't, you know, watched their last couple of fights. It's like
– Kyle, what you make this one quick because we got to get these last two fights to make.
I'm going
to
go with Dos Anjos on this one only because if I remember correctly, I feel like the last time I saw Magny fight, he got beat up pretty good.
I don't remember.
I want to say he got beat up in his last fight.
I think he got beat up and he came back like pretty quick after that and won that fight. But I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, I want to say Dos Anjos, man. But Dos Anjos hasn't looked the best either in his last few fights.
Right.
So if I got to make a final pick, I'm going to go Magny too, only because Dos Anjos, it just seems like he's kind of hit a slide a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to go with Magny as well. The co-main event, which was supposed to be the main event of Fight Week, I think it was July 9th, Amanda Nunes versus Valentina Shevchenko for the Women's Bantamweight Championship. Kyle,
try to make this quick. Even though Shevchenko's got like a real dynamic striking style, I just don't know if she's got enough pop to be able to knock out Nunes. And Nunes is going to overpower her, in my opinion. I feel like she's naturally stronger. So, in my opinion, I think that Shevchenko, unless she lands that one good shot, especially with her being a kickboxer and having that background, as they showed in the countdown, which is possible, but I think Nunes is going to overpower and be able to use that for the win.
Okay. Mr. Fury Jury.
I think Nunes is going to gas out, like, third or fourth round, and what is her name? Shalomenko?
Shevchenko.
Is going to take it over and beat her.
I got a quick question about that. To you three UFC aficionados, how is that division since Ronda left? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, has anybody had a successful title defense since Ronda got beat?
Nunez did. But it was against Rousey. Or who was it? Nunez beat Tate and then beat Rousey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nunez is the champ right now.
Yeah, like 2 months.
Okay.
All righty. I'm going to pick Amanda Nunez, but I think this fight goes past 3 rounds. Shevchenko can get it, because I was at that fight when Nunez fought Shevchenko the first time, and that third round, you could see Nunez gassing out. So I think if that fight had kept going, Shevchenko probably would have started pulling forward and might have pulled that one out.
Shevchenko is like so relaxed when she fights. Like, you see her, she just has like no energy, like conserving all of her energy.
I was in Dallas when they had the big press conferences, and she just seemed like, okay, I'm here.
She did that creepy ass little dance too. After,
yeah,
right?
I saw that.
I don't even know how to take that.
Plus, another thing that could help Shevchenko though too is, you guys talked about how Nunez gasses. I was watching on the countdown before I came over here. She's training at altitude in Colorado too, so her gas tank's pretty good.
Okay,
good.
All right, the main event, the champion, one of the greatest champions in UFC history that doesn't get any publicity. That's point of contention I have, but we'll get into that another time. Mighty Mouse Johnson goes for the record as he defends his flyweight championship against Ray Borg. We'll go with the expert, Kyle.
I'm going to go Mighty Mouse on that one, dude. I don't really see anybody at 25 being able to take Mighty Mouse out.
Okay.
Mighty Mice.
Mighty Mice.
That's his click name.
Yeah, DJ. I think Borg's going to be a tougher fight than people think, but, I mean, DJ is DJ.
Mighty Mouse.
Rockwell Johnson.
All righty.
Say Rockwell.
Rock with Johnson.
I said Rockhold. I was like, oh.
I'm going to go with Mighty Mouse.
All right.
Miles, you got to take off? Or are you going to stick around for the wrestling part, man?
I got to take off for the wrestling part.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you being on the show, man. Why don't you go ahead and throw your social media out to the people one more time, and go ahead and announce that fight in December. Go ahead.
Pre-order your tickets now, man. Thanks for having me on the show, and yeah, hopefully I'll be seeing you guys, all the fight fans, in December at Little Caesars Arena.
Yes, sir.
Put your social media out real quick.
Just Fury Jury for Twitter, Instagram, and then Miles Fury Jury for Facebook.
All righty. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk a little bit of wrestling. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I want to thank Mr. Miles, the Fury Jury, for joining us to talk a little MMA, talk about his career, man. That was a pleasure for me. I don't know about you guys.
It was good. I mean, it was good talk. I mean, like I said, I'm not the biggest MMA fan, but to actually be next to a guy that actually does actively compete in the UFC, that was cool. And I'm probably going to start watching a little more now. I'm going to watch some of his old classic stuff and, you know, probably get back more into it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Especially since he's a Michigan guy. I got to support him.
Oh, yeah. And I'm calling it now. Conor McGregor versus Miles Fury.
He don't want the Fury.
I'm joking. Dude,
it was just cool to have him on there, man, because a lot of people don't know, but Miles has been a big influence in my life.
Yeah, man, why don't you go ahead and tell that story real quick, before you jump into wrestling.
Like I said, man, when I met Miles, I was 16 years old, so Miles was 19. You know, Miles was working his way up, through the pro scene, but it was he was working his way up through the pro scene, but it was before he got in the UFC, man, and I was kind of a dark part of my life, you know, going through some of my struggles, I don't hold no punches, man, because it's a big part of my story, but almost ended up committed suicide at one point. So, I kind of stopped training. I hadn't been at MASH very long. Miles hit me up at my house and, asked where I'd been at and asked what was going on and, you know, really took me under his wing, man. Like him and Big Don Richard,
we'll have him on the show.
Big Don will definitely be a future guest. He's already told me he'd love to come on. I can't thank God enough for both of those dudes, man, straight up, because Miles really came into my life and came in like a big brother. He was there when I had to have leg surgery when they cut my Achilles tendon. He was there when I had my stomach surgery. So to me, man, I don't care whether that guy wins his next 10, loses his next 10. To me, man, that dude's legit. And I'm just so grateful that he would take time out of his day to, you know, come help me out, you know, help me get this podcast off the ground.
Yes, sir.
Like I said, man, Miles is a humble dude. I'm just glad. And
has a better attitude than a lot of fighters.
Miles is level headed, dude. Miles is never going to be a guy you're going to see coming out talking shit. Like, even when Diego came out talking shit, you didn't see Miles come back, you know, firing back with it, other than, you know, we're going to see what's up when we get in the cage. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, like I said, man, for me, like I said, to me, Miles to me is more than a friend. He's like family to me. Same as Don. You know, Don is more like a father figure to me. So, both of those guys, like I said, played an integral role for me. So it was great for me to be able to have them on the show. Don will be on real soon. Shout out to Big Don. Shout out to Fuse MMA. Mm-hmm. Like I said, man, it was cool for me to be able to have my brother on with us.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that, man. Man, I got a little sad there for a second.
It's nothing sad, bro. But like I said, man, it just shows how God can put people in your life from all walks of life. I mean, when I met Miles, dude, I mean, I'd fought a few times boxing, but it was never my choice to go to MASH Gym in the first place. So it was never my choice. So to go there and then meet a guy who's a lifelong friend for me now.
Oh yeah.
So like I said, I just am eternally grateful. So yeah. Not to get soapbox or nothing like that, but that's just what it is, bro.
Yeah, that's why I wanted you to tell the story, man, because I know he's very important to you. And so let's go ahead and jump into this. Let's go ahead and bring up what we wanted to bring up in the last segment. No, I wasn't trying to avoid it. We were running short on time before the break, so I was just trying to keep the show going.
Man, I get them W's over here, son. We're just going to keep it that way.
When you're kind of, you know, quarterbacking everything, man, you got to call the audibles.
Right.
So you know what?
He just didn't want to embarrass himself in front of a UFC.
Matter of fact, you said what you had to say. Black Kyle, why don't you go ahead and tell it?
Come on, Pepper.
Well, for those who are regularly listening to the podcast, you know that we made predictions for before the last WWE pay per view,
SummerSlam,
which was the
WrestleFest.
The WrestleFest, the
WrestleSlam,
the show of the summer, and like the last three pay per views, nobody really knew what was going on. Yeah. I mean, they actually been doing a pretty good job with their booking, because we're all smarks and pretty much nobody really figured how it was. Everybody kind of went out on a limb, especially Devin, to see how things were going to go.
You know what they say about walking out on the limb, homie.
Between the NXT and the actual SummerSlam pay-per-view, who has the rankings? I think we were like 10 and like
both you and I both tied.
The two Kyles had 10, and me and Kevin got 8.
It's a good day to be a Kyle, motherfuckers.
There you go, hey. Kyle. KC's up in this.
Split up, though.
No. All right, cut all the bullshit. Just tell them what we got to do. Shit.
So, if you guys are familiar with the show Practical Jokers, you know when somebody loses, somebody has to pay. So these two gentlemen,
Tweedledee and Tweedledum,
are going to be getting wet tonight. Giggity gig.
That sounded kind of gay.
So we have the Wheel of Water app.
Shout out to the Fantasy Footballs for making that app.
Yes, so you can go download that now. And that is going to be how these gentlemen are going to be.
And also make sure that people know that these two jokers owe me some fine cuisine.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, we owe you lunch, too.
My fat ass
don't need to eat.
So hopefully everybody makes it out for the next pay-per-view. I'll pay it up at Bailey's. I don't know about you, Kev, when you're going to pay up.
I'll take his.
Okay. So I'll pay you and you pay him. All right. There we go.
It's all in good fun, guys.
So stay tuned after the podcast for some good hijinks.
Wait, we're doing that tonight?
Right. Oh,
well, we can intersplice it. I tried to
get out of it, but I guess we'll do it tonight. All right.
Oh, shit.
All right. Let's jump into some wrestling news. I don't know if you guys saw Ric Flair's Instagram post.
He ain't dead yet, motherfucker.
Hell yeah.
Woo! I'm getting that shirt.
I might have to get that shirt too, man. But Ric Flair, he went through a little rough time there, but he's still dead yet.
He's Ric Flair.
He's still kicked out, man. So shout out to Ric Flair, man.
Yeah, one thing I didn't know, boy. I started looking
still
up
still keeping
stuff.
Them alligators on the ground.
There you go. By the I got a little nervous, like, because I for a second listened to everybody that was saying stuff. Nobody really knew what was going to happen. They really thought, you know, it might go left. So I really started looking at, you know, retrospective stuff about him. I forgot before that plane crash he had in the 70s, he was pushing 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a power lifter, yeah, man.
So, I mean, if you go and look at those photos versus him in the 80s, I mean, they look like two completely different people.
If I showed you a picture of Ric Flair in the 70s, you wouldn't know who it was.
Yeah.
You would not recognize him.
They just showed a video a few months ago. I mean, dude, at 67, the guy is deadlifting 400 pounds. Yeah.
And he loves the University of Michigan, too, which makes me love him even more.
Woo,
go blue. Say something. Mm. Say something, Kevin. Say something.
Hey, I'm a fan of both, so, you know, go green, go white,
I'm conflicted
blue.
Because my family's all going to U of M, but I got a cousin that goes to State, and green is my favorite color.
I've always said it.
And I'm a Pistons fan, so therefore I have to hate the Celtics, but I love their jerseys, so it burns my soul.
Look, I've always said it this simple. I'm a Michigan fan first and foremost, but I want State to win as long as they're not playing Michigan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a good way to look at it.
All right, so just off topic. So if you have gun to your head, State's playing Ohio State.
State? What the hell?
What do you mean?
Wait, what state? Michigan or
Michigan State versus Ohio State?
Of course, I'm going State. I hate Ohio State.
I was just checking.
All these bums that live in Michigan and are Ohio State fans, you guys just a bunch of bandwagons. All right.
Oh, yeah, you know, they're in the Midwest. No, fuck that. They're Ohio State. Fuck Ohio.
It's Ohio.
Not against anybody in our listeners that are from Ohio, but fuck Ohio.
All right, before we jump into some WWE stuff, I don't know if everybody knows about the situation that's going on with Sexy Star. Mm-hmm. Kyle, you said you weren't 100% familiar.
I know what happened, but I haven't been able to see any of her comments
did it today, didn't she?
Yeah, she just put something out today.
Covering her ass.
Kyle, why don't you go ahead and wrap the story up real quick. Give us a quick synopsis.
Well, to a little background
as
on
I eat
it,
some more of my snacks.
Sexy Star, from what I started researching, she's not well-liked in any of the locker rooms and any of the organizations she fights for. She's known for being very stiff. She's known for going off script and really kind of trying to improvise, but it's not to the enjoyment of the fans. It's more to the detriment of the people she's performing in the ring with. And a couple other performers have come out and said that she's somebody they don't trust in the ring, which anybody that knows wrestling, the most important thing in that ring is trust, because you're putting your life in that person's hands. And she's done this before, not to this extent. And when she put Rosemary in that arm bar, she knew that she had not a pre-existing injury, but similar to Randy Orton. She's had issues with that shoulder for the year, so you know to take it easy on that shoulder if you're in the ring with her. Well, apparently she had got into it with a couple people before the match, during the match, and then during the finish, she completely put her in a legit Kimura MMA lock and actually popped her elbow out of place.
I heard it was an armbar, but
armbar.
She legitimately popped her elbow out of place to where the referee legitimately had to break up the hold. And they're saying she's going to be out for a couple weeks, but the fact that it's going to change a lot of booking.
She probably popped her bursa sac. That's normally
the caps on her. Yeah.
So it's an ugly issue, because it really doesn't bring a good light to wrestling, especially with the organizations that she's in. They need as much good publicity as possible. AAA is doing good, but it's not a huge name yet. And then being, you know, even associated with Impact, they need all the good press they can get.
And Lucha Underground, too.
Yeah. I mean, especially because a lot of people are leaving Lucha Underground. You know, you lost Ray, you lost Johnny Mundo.
Lost Talia.
Talia. You know, you're starting to lose a lot of your big names there, you know, a lot of your draws. So it's not a good situation. And then it looks like she's getting blacklisted. Like nobody wants to work with her in the ring. And then to think that any promoter would take a chance on her, I mean, the promoter can try to book her, but you can't get somebody to get in the ring with her. And then even if it does, it could turn into a legit shoot fight.
Right.
And that's not going to be a good thing for the industry.
Kev, you got any thoughts on Sexy Star?
Not really, because I didn't read what she – I didn't read none of this stuff. I just heard about the first incident. I didn't even check up on it. Like,
did you see the video?
No.
Oh, it's not good. It's not good to look at. You can really see that she's
I tried to look for it, but I ain't really got a chance to look at it yet.
Well, Sexy Star did put a statement out yesterday or today. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But, basically, you know, she was defending herself, of course. Basically, what she was saying was that there was really no problem. She did put her in an armbar, which she was saying is her, you know, finisher that she uses all the time. And what she was saying was, like, she didn't know that she had hurt herself. She said she rolled out of the ring and walked back to the back on her own. Someone came up to her after the match and said, hey, something's going on with Rosemary. So she went to go check on her, and she said, yeah, she had an ice pack on her elbow, but she said the doctors really weren't looking at her. And she, what she was saying is, like, she looked at her and she looked like she was okay. And then she left, and then, you know, I guess Twitter and Instagram went ablaze and basically dogging her. And yeah, she was basically saying that people know me, I wouldn't do anything like this. People that I've wrestled before, they know that I'm a safe worker, my trainers. And she was saying that, like, this was kind of like insulting to the people that trained her.
Mm-hmm. But if you read her statement and then actually watch the footage, it contradicts it.
Yeah, because
you can tell by her body language, you can tell she didn't run right out the ring. She looked at Rosemary after she had her arm, kind of, she was holding her arm and the referee was telling her to back off.
Right.
I mean, you can tell you can tell right there she knew what she did.
So was Sexy Star saying, like, it was a shoot?
Well, okay, so here's the funny thing. Before she put this statement out today, and I forgot where I heard this from, so we'll just count this as rumor and innuendo to steal a term from Bruce Pritchard.
Grain of salt.
But basically, the rumor that I heard before was that Sexy Star was saying that, because it was a fatal four-way match. Basically, she was saying that the other three women in this match were shooting on her during mm-hmm. the match. So apparently there was a problem before the match. Mm-hmm. During the match, she said they were shooting on her. So she said, well, okay, if we're going to play that game, I'm throwing someone in the arm bar. So that's one of the rumors and innuendo that I heard coming up. And what the story of Sexy Star was telling wasn't necessarily true, because she said they tried to go over the finish of the match and said, you know, they basically agreed to what the finish was. So
it seems like it was a lot of misconceptions about what the match was going to be, right. Which, if she's been doing this how long, you know the finish. I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, some people are, you know, technical and like to completely script out the entire match. Some people like to call it in the ring. But you know what the finish is going to be, especially in a fatal four-way.
Right.
Was that the main event or was that the co-main event?
That I'm not sure about.
You know, but it was for the title. So you know that's going to be something that is, you know, done ahead of time. So it seems like she's doing a lot of backtracking. And
something else that she said, too, was that originally it was supposed to be a one-on-one match, but they wanted to add Rosemary, and I can't remember who the other person was, but they added them kind of later on, so I guess.
It just seems like they have a lot of turmoil in AAA in general.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole way that title even was switched. I mean, Taya Valkyrie never lost the title.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The whole controversy as to how she lost it and the way that Vampiro did it and the way
she talked about it on Jericho's podcast.
Yeah. And the way that they kind of, you know, what's the word I want to use?
Screwed her over.
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as how they got the title back, they kind of
they led
Johnny Mundo, which is her fiance, to believe, oh yeah, we're just using the belt for some, you know, some promo stuff, only to find out that they weren't going to let her bring the belt back.
They wanted the physical belt because they knew if she had the physical belt, there was nothing that they could do with her. It's almost like,
and
a,
it
like
seems
a
like a lot of it seems to, at least as far as Taya Valkyrie is concerned, a lot of the drama with the things that are going on in AAA and Lucha Underground seem to be stemmed around Vampiro.
Considering Vampiro is like the head
of their talent relations and all that stuff. So
he's starting to really kind of go not to make him a verb, but a Jeff Jarrett type of way. I mean, like, the way he's not controlling the locker room, he's basically just trying to sell the tickets and not.
I mean, but Jeff Jarrett just got back hold of that whole locker room.
I mean, but I'm talking about, like, in the early TNA days. I mean, like, when it was completely going right before, you know, and including the Dixie Carter era, you know, it was mayhem. And it's starting to look like that. And Vampiro, I mean, he's a legend in this business.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so the fact that he's doing this now as the head booker and as the head of a promotion, it's kind of interesting to see, because you don't normally see a guy that's been around that long, that's been in as many places as he's been, to really kind of run an organization like this, because you know, you've seen so much, you know what works in the locker room and works, you know, in the promotion for the most part.
Right. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on. But real quick, Kyle, I know you heard this, but like I said, Chris Jericho was talking to Taya. This was before the whole incident that happened with Sexy Star. And just to prove that Sexy Star is pretty much blacklisted, Chris Jericho said, hey, Sexy Star, you're a sexy piece of shit.
That's why I love Jericho.
But, I mean, to hear the anger in his voice, it proves like, how much of a taboo this really, really is.
Like I said, like, they take – everybody takes – you know, when you're in the ring with somebody, they're taking – you know, you're trusting them with your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, look at – you know, bring up a famous botch. Look at Stone Cold and Bret Hart. Stone Cold trusted Owen Hart. He trusted Owen to do a safe pile driver on him. He intentionally knew that his head was too low, and he ruined his best earning years. I mean, you look at that. I mean, that took away what – could have been the greatest era in Stone Cold's, you know, it was the greatest era in his career, and he had to take, what, a year off?
So let's go ahead and let's lighten things up a little bit. You know, we talked about Ric Flair. We talked about Sexy Star. Let's have a little fun. Let's talk about another promotion out there, a little independent promotion from the 1980s. Let's talk about Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Salt, Kyle, your thoughts on Southpaw?
Bum, bum, bum.
My thoughts are fuck all of y'all.
I'm literally telling you, all the skits add up to maybe 18 minutes for the first season.
It's not that long.
They're not long.
I want to watch it. I just, like, you guys got to understand, for the listeners at home, I work midnights. So when my ass comes home,
watch it on the way home.
Wait.
Watch it on the way home. That's not a real safe thing, dude.
Did you watch Mae Young?
I watched that on my off day, though. I watched all of it kind of all at once.
Southpaw's literally been out for, what?
3 weeks.
Yeah.
This is the second season. The first season.
I didn't even think about it till you brought it up the other day.
I'm telling you, it is pure gold. That's one of the best things they've done in total this year is Southpaw.
Okay, let me get your thoughts on Southpaw Regional Wrestling.
When I heard season two was coming out, my main thing was like, okay, I want to see what Fandango about to do. It was the main thing.
Chetterfield.
And this season he was in love with Renee Young. I forgot her name.
Oh God, what is the name? Because he kept
Sarah. Sarah.
Was
Renee
it
Young
Debbie
too,
or
bro.
Something?
Was it Sarah? Was it
Sarah? I think something like that. Because he kept screaming. But Cena, man. Cena's been golden at. Cena, I mean, all of them. I mean, AJ Styles, I mean, it makes me wish they would have had him in the first one. Because AJ as that down south used car salesman, that was perfect. Rhino and Seth Rollins, I'd rather see that
We're
tag team.
We're going to beat meat. What?
I'd rather see that tag team than him and Dean.
The Butchers.
But you know who I think is one of the more underrated characters from both seasons that I don't think anybody really talked about?
Oh. TJP.
No. Porkchop Jones.
Oh.
Jason Jordan, man.
Yeah. I mean, he's got charisma.
Yeah, he does.
But you have to put it in the right vacuum.
Oh, it worked on that one, man. Because when I saw him with that fake mustache, man, and them chaps, Porkchop Jones.
The thing is, it took me a while to realize that was him. Like, you know, some of them have the, you know, makeup or disguises on. Like, you knew that was Jericho.
Yeah.
But him, it took me a second to. I'm like, oh, that's Jordan.
It was funny to see. They say, okay, we got our first woman wrestler.
I did not think that that's where they were going to go with that.
And they say, she'll have nobody else to fight.
Like, no, there's only one?
There's only one?
There's only one?
You know she needs two, right?
That's like lethal.
Honestly, I dropped my phone. When I watched that. Like, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
There's no 29th? It's not lethal. My God, man, we're going to be ruined.
Man, that. And then one thing I did like is that, okay, the first season took place after the second season. So it was good to see Tex Ferguson and
they had
Johnny
to come
Too
back.
Bad.
They had to come back.
When they were a team and then, yeah.
Had to come. That to me, other than the payoff with the Lethal Libre with Cena, my favorite part was them. Because I honestly had tears in my eyes when Gallows was talking to the camera. He's like, when you had Greg the Hammer Valentine put me in an arm bar for 4 hours, and I still came out of it. And you know what's going to happen? Big boot, lariat, 1, 2, 3, looking up at the lights. I'm like, they need to push these guys. Like, that is the
what?
They really need to push them more.
Well, Fandango and
Breeze.
Breeze, they were on Jericho's podcast, and he was basically saying that.
That was a good episode too. I listened to that whole one. That was a really good episode.
But he was saying that basically Southpaw and other skits that they were doing is the reason why they got the Fashion File and why they started to get a little bit of a push, man. So that goes to show you, hey, use all those different platforms. Mm-hmm. He's saying basically like, you can do anything you want damn near on WWE.com.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the New Day. They were doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes that if you just go through and just watch New Day on WWE.com, it's a lot of hilarious material that you don't see on TV. So that goes to show you, hey, use all the different tools that you have, man.
The thing that gets me with that, too, is I heard the reason they didn't have Big Bart and Kristen Angel back was they wanted too much money. Lana came out and said that somebody asked her, like, why weren't you guys there? Because that was a lot of people's favorite thing with Rusev, because he actually had to have a personality. He actually had to have a good personality, and apparently they wanted too much for it, and they said no. So, wow. I mean, that's the thing. You have to – I mean, I know Rusev's in the situation he's in now, but you got to take some of those opportunities and, you know, make the best of them.
Man, another underrated part of the show was Victor and Connor.
Oh, my goodness.
The Top Guns. What, you can't say Top Guns?
but last season, they was the Surfers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They just had the one, like, 30-second skit where they were debuting. Like, whoever came up with that was a genius, because that – I mean, I heard that they were originally planned on doing it, like, as a joke for Vince's birthday. And then a lot of the higher-ups started seeing it like, no, we can actually do a little more with this. And they let him completely do it because they say Vince loves that old-school stuff because he hates it, ironically.
Yeah.
You know, like he like the just the regional territorial days, the all the old school gimmicks. He just loves laughing at it. So to see it come like right now to be one of the most highest. I think they said it was one of the highest selling shirts they had this year.
Really?
That Southpaw. I mean, that thing sold out. I mean, I didn't know it was real for a second. I'm like, they need to put that on a shirt. And then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, well, let me go buy it. Remember, we were talking.
Yeah.
We went and looked about 4 days after the finale, and the shirt was sold out.
Wow.
What's the odds of it coming the third season and being on the network?
I can see that. I mean, they're going to have to do something because everybody's schedules are so busy, but they're going to do another. Because, I mean, if you look it up, they got millions of hits on YouTube. So that's bringing a lot of eyes, and that's bringing revenue into them. So they're going to have to do it. I think they might start doing it with other people that, you know, aren't like – you're not going to get Cena and Jericho on.
Get some of the
episode.
Referees or the other guys involved. Yeah, because it's one of the referees that's on here. I can't remember which one.
John Cone.
Yeah.
But all right. So who are some of the other characters that you guys really really like?
Like I said, I like AJ's used car salesman. Well, what was it? Al, Big Al.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Something like that. Because when I first saw him, I'm like, that looks like AJ Styles. And I heard the voice. I'm like, that sounds like AJ Styles. And then I really watched it. I'm like, that's AJ Styles. I'm like, that's perfect.
Well, me personally, I like the fact that they got the Ric Flair playing the Ric Flair impersonator.
That was gold.
This is not Ric Flair, but this chicken.
I'm like, I don't know if Jay Lethal is with the company yet, so I don't know. That sounds like Ric Flair.
Oh, and then last week on Monday Night Raw, they actually had one of the wrestlers from Southpaw on there.
Pelvis Wesley.
That Memphis crowd was horrible. That should have went over.
It really should have.
The fact that you had Pelvis Wesley and the King there, and they were just sitting on their hands. Because the second they said, I'm like, oh, it's Pelvis. This is going to be gold.
It was like a fart in church, man.
And he does some good work.
Well, it's funny about it. They never not mentioned that it was Heath Slater.
Yeah. That's basically his new gimmick. And I'm sorry. I know it's been done to death, but he really should start hitting people with that guitar every week.
No.
Because it was begging for
that
it.
Nuts.
It was begging. I know. But if you're going to have the guitar and then you're in Memphis and then you got Pelvis Wesley, I'm like, just hit him with the guitar. And then he did. I'm like, that's a missed opportunity. Maybe they won't do it because he almost killed Finn. But I'm like, if you're going to have the guitar, you got to hit him with it.
Man. So they took his last name from him.
So people, go out there and watch Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Kyle, excuse me. It's some of the best stuff on YouTube right now. But let's talk about something else that's, you know what? I'm going to go about this a different way. Kyle, you and me kind of talked about a hot take that you have about women's wrestling right now. And no, it's not about Southpaw, how they only have one wrestler. But yeah, we'll I'm going to let you give your hot take, and it'll transition us into our next topic. So why don't you go ahead and
I know that they're doing the Mae Young Classic now.
We'll talk about that in a second.
But has the women's revolution ended? I mean, if you look at what it started with, and there's kind of a debate of when it officially started. Did it officially start with Paige? Did it end with, you know, start, kind of start with AJ? You can kind of say it really did start when they, when the company recognized it was in NXT with the four horsewomen.
Yep.
And if you look at it right now, you got Charlotte, who obviously the last 2 weeks is understandable why she wasn't on TV.
Right.
But even before that, the biggest thing she's been in since she's been on SmackDown was in the Money in the Bank match. Then if you look at how Sasha is even complaining now publicly about how she's being booked,
yeah,
how she's only having 2 week title reigns, so where they're even using that
as
part of the storyline, which if you know anything about the company, you know anything they say is basically what Vince wants them to say. That's Vince's mouth. They're Vince's mouthpieces. So the fact that you have Alexa Bliss publicly in the feud demeaning her for only having 2 week title reigns and being a four-time champion, that's Vince saying that.
It's a punishment from her.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at, what was it, around March, right after WrestleMania, you could tell she was in the doghouse. I mean, because she kind of got injured. She won the title, lost it, 12 days later on Raw to Charlotte,
nine days
later, and then she was just gone pretty much for a couple weeks.
Right. Yeah, but don't read. I mean, don't always read some.
I mean, she's. I mean, not reading into it. I mean, she said it herself.
I agree with her. Not her being mad about how she's booked, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's because she's in trouble or something. Like,
well, I mean, if you look at that, you can also look at what she's been publicly feuding with fans. I mean, granted, you don't go up to somebody at 4 a.m. and, you know, want to have a full conversation with them, but then you look at Rusev's tweet from 3 weeks ago. Pretty much everybody agreed that he was talking about Charlotte. Because you know about that?
No.
Rusev put out a tweet a few weeks ago. He didn't say anybody's name, but he also mentioned Eddie Guerrero's name in the tweet. And the only two people that have kind of a connection to Eddie are Aiden English, being his son-in-law, and Sasha Banks, who models her whole career after him, basically.
Okay.
So it was talking about dealing with fans, which has been kind of a hot take the last couple of weeks. Even Seth Rollins came out over the weekend, you know, saying the same thing.
Right.
So you look at her situation. You look at Bayley. Bayley's trajectory has gone unbelievably bad. I mean, she was the biggest thing in NXT for a while. Came up to the main roster, great momentum, gets the title. Loses it in her hometown, and then the Bayley, this is your life.
I don't think she should have won the title when she did.
I
think
I don't even
manage that.
Yeah.
I think they messed up a potential great WrestleMania moment.
Yeah. I mean, that to me was, I'm like, you want to build the WrestleMania moments, you build them around the baby faces. Who's one of the top five biggest baby faces on the entire roster? It's Bayley. You look at, and then I've been leading up to this, what the hell's been going on with Becky Lynch? That's just, I mean, she's arguably the best wrestler of the four horsewomen. Charlotte, I think, is the best athlete of the four. But being a technical wrestler, I think Becky is the best wrestler of the four horsewomen.
There's been nothing for her.
And other than the last thing she had anything to do was when they had Alexa Bliss and Mickie James before the Superstar Shakeup. After that, they put Alexis and Mickie James on Raw, and she hasn't had anything to do.
So you think the women's revolution is?
I think that they've peaked. I mean, they had this idea for the Mae Young Classic since last year. It was just getting everybody's schedule to actually do it.
Right.
But look at the Mae. You got the Mae Young Classic right now. Look at what happened with the Cruiserweight Classic last year, and then look at
Cruiserweight Classic was great. But
yeah. And then
nothing is really.
And then look at 205 Live. Look at how the Cruiserweights have been treated since then. I mean, the best thing that's come out of the Cruiserweight Classic and 205 Live is Neville.
Yeah. But I think part of that is, all right, we'll get back to the Mae Young. But with 205 Live, I think their problem was that they built it up on the network. They built it up in Full Sail, which is NXT country. And then we're going to put them on tour with all the big guys. We don't know who these people are. A lot of people that don't have the network don't really know who these are. Your casual fans aren't necessarily watching 205 of the Cruiserweight Classic like that. So I think they should have kept that smaller. They should have kept that in Full Sail. They should have did that as like a show after NXT or something like that. If they want to do it live.
And this is just me. These just not my type of cruiserweights.
Oh, of course not.
I mean, they're Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit cruiserweights. When I think cruiserweights and the way they kind of build them up,
what's
I'm thinking
with Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit. Yeah.
I'm saying the cruiserweights that they're building this up, the cruiserweights that really started the cruiserweight revolution, if you want to call it, in the 90s, was Eddie Guerrero. That was Hoofentu Guerrero. That was Ultimo Dragon. That was Chris Jericho.
At the same time, we grew up in the WCW cruiserweights are not. They just evolve and they do. They still do the same things. They do other things too.
Malenko had a big part to play in that too, man.
I mean, I'm saying he did, but I mean, if you there's a difference in the cruiserweight between Rey Mysterio Jr. and Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit.
So you're saying like now the cruiserweights are more technical than high fly?
Yeah, that's what they're just smaller technical guys, which if you look at the roster, Seth Rollins does more cruiserweight moves than what these guys do.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's kind of hard because back then the cruiserweights were different. Like you didn't have Hulk Hogan doing tope suicidas and stuff like that. But you can watch Cesaro or Dean Ambrose or Seth Rollins do the same thing the cruiserweights are doing. So what makes them stand out?
Exactly. That's the thing. It's. I mean, I think they really blew a great opportunity with doing the cruiserweights because they put on good
matches. Same thing with the women now?
I think so. I think they figured, okay, we never push women outside of, you know, Trish and Lita to have like a big main event type, you know, feud or put money into the matches. And they started seeing that, okay, we got to do something different. What can we do? Okay, well, we got Ric Flair's daughter. Okay, we got this, we got Snoop Dogg's cousin who has a lot of charisma. You know, we got Paige, who's a prodigy. Right. Been doing this since she was like 12. I know you got a lot of female wrestlers who actually are great technical wrestlers. These aren't models. Beautiful, but they're not models first. They're wrestlers first. And then so, okay, well, let's see what happens. And then they start putting on match of the night, match of the year candidates. And they're like, okay, women's revolution. Let's market that. Have Stephanie come on and be a babyface and talk about women's wrestling. You know, get the crowd chanting for them. They have the best women's match out of WrestleMania, you know, in a triple threat.
Right.
And then now they don't know really what to do.
My only thought with that, man, is this goes back to something else that Devin and I were talking about yesterday. I feel like because with how much information is known with podcasts and the internet and all that stuff, I feel like people are reading way too much into it. You got to remember, they've only got so much time in a show, especially on SmackDown when they've only got 2 hours. Yeah. Secondly, you can only have so many people that are on top. You can't have, I mean, yes, you've got a lot of good females over there on SmackDown, but you can only feature so many of them because whether anyone wants to admit it or not, it's still always going to be a male-dominated thing. Now, the women are really starting to carve their niche out, but I definitely wouldn't say that the women's revolution has died at all. I mean, especially now that you've done this Mae Young Classic because you're about to bring in all these new faces. Then you've got – look at what Alexa Bliss has done just since she's turned over heel like that. You know, she's come as another face in it when originally it was just you had Bayley, Sasha, Becky, and Charlotte and Paige for the most part and Natty. I mean, you're getting new ones in there. But, I mean, don't be so quick to say that it's shut down because, in my opinion, I mean, I don't think they had that bad of a match when they had Naomi and Natty at SummerSlam.
No, I'm saying the match is still good because they're still the best females they've ever had.
We'll get into what I'm about to say. Damn it, this goes into the Mae Young Classic.
We're gonna
go into it anyway. But look at the crossover that's about to happen. They had the Four Horsewomen of MMA. You've got Shayna Baszler who killed it in the Mae Young Classic, and Jessamine Duke and Ronda Rousey. Then you've got the four.
I can't remember.
Marina Shafir. Yep. Roger Strong's wife.
Yeah.
So
that's her name, Roger Strong's wife.
So you've got them, and then you've got Becky, Charlotte, and Charlotte were there because Sasha was overseas. So that's going to be something big in and of itself. They already are teasing that they're going to do something with it.
I mean, that's been coming for a while. I mean, that's been coming for a while,
but you got to remember, though, Ronda.
They actually did something with it, though. They actually put it on camera.
Yeah, it was on camera, not only in the back and on WWE.com, but they showed it during the matches, too. Yeah. And, I mean, you also have to take this into account. Yes, they've been talking about bringing Ronda in. Yes, they did the thing with her and The Rock at WrestleMania, but she was still fighting actively.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason they let that happen with Brock was because that's a one-time deal. Like, you guys got to stop reading so much into it. I mean,
I didn't start reading into it.
No, I mean, in a sense of something like that, to bring somebody like Ronda Rousey in, or to do this whole four horsewomen versus four horsewomen thing.
I mean, this was going to come with Ronda anyway. I mean, Ronda's nickname is because of Roddy Piper being her all-time favorite wrestler.
Ronda, yes.
She's always been kind of connected to wrestling.
Ronda, yes, but look at it this way. Now you've got all four of the four horsewomen from wrestling, and you've got the four that they're going to bring in, because you know they've already teased it at this point. So they're going to bring all four of them in. That's going to bring mainstream over from MMA. That's going to bring just sports world in general looking at it. I wouldn't say that it's died. But
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I think that they've peaked. It's peaked. That women's revolution, it's
I'm going to tell you the name itself.
No, I'm just like, the. I mean, like, what more can they do now? They've had the Money in the Bank. They've had the Hell in the Cell. They've had the table match, a ladder match.
Like, they're all wanting. Well, I mean, here's a bigger spot on WrestleMania.
I kind of agree with you, but when you say peaked, people think of that as a bad thing. I'm going to tell you the moment when I realized that the women's revolution was over. Remember, what was the main event of Raw last week?
Shit. Steel cage match?
No.
Sasha and Alexa Bliss for the championship.
Yeah.
They didn't mention that not once on that show. Any other time that women main event in Monday Night Raw? No, they didn't. They didn't talk about it. Not like they did before. Women are main event in Monday Night Raw. They're not even talking about it anymore. So that lets you know now we've literally gotten to a point where a lot of this stuff is already happening. It's not a big story anymore.
Name the Raw women's roster. Outside of Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, and Sasha Banks. It's taking you that long.
You didn't even give me a chance to say the other, but I mean,
I'm saying Emma. I mean, they have Emma. Give Emma a chance. Lisa Fox, Emma, Dana Brooke. I mean,
I think Dana Brooke will be back in a good part of it too. But I mean,
didn't she get into a car accident or something?
No, her boyfriend died. Okay, but even before that. When was the last time you saw her? The only time you saw her was in a backstage segment with Emma.
So, and here's something that I was talking to my girlfriend about.
Your girlfriend's into wrestling?
Nah, she is.
She's kind of watching it with me.
I envy you.
She watches it with me because she wants to get into it. But I feel like this era of wrestling, period, might be the best ever, even better than the Attitude Era. As far as talent, there is so much talent in the WWE right now. They don't know what to do with it.
That's the problem.
There's not enough time. So I feel like they need to stop bringing people up because they don't know what to do with what they have right.
I'm so scared for Bobby Roode, man.
You could name 10 people right now who could be contending for the Universal Championship on Raw right now.
Cesaro.
Not even going people that I'm talking about, people that have won it before or won big championships before. I literally went through like 10, 11 people. And then you still got to have guys that are underneath that haven't made it yet.
The mid-card is their biggest problem. They don't have a legit mid-card.
Right. All their mid-card guys are guys that are on top and probably should be on top, right?
Or they're throwing them in the tag teams.
Exactly. So.
You agree?
You don't agree? No, what you got, Kev?
I agree, but I hate the thing with the tag team thing, like where we got two top-level guys. We ain't got nothing to do with him. Put him in the tag team. I hate that.
And that's what I'm saying. There's way too much talent right now, and they don't know what to do with them. SmackDown, and I can't believe I'm saying this, SmackDown probably needs to be 3 hours.
They have enough talent to where you could justify that being 3 hours. The thing that scares me with Road Dogg in it, if you look at everything that's been happening since he's come over creatively, it really seems like they saw how, in my opinion, better SmackDown was than Raw for a while. And then they said, okay, well, we can't do that. We got to make Raw. Raw's the baby. Right. Raw's Vince's. That's his flagship show. He's there every Monday night in the gorilla position or on the headset. And they started taking what they thought was the best parts of SmackDown to try to beef up Raw.
And now SmackDown's having it.
Now SmackDown's having a problem. And then it's going back to where it was before.
I don't see that SmackDown is having problems, though. Because in my opinion, I still think that SmackDown is still
one of the better shows.
Far it,
it's,
better.
It's the better written and put together show, but the talent.
See, yeah, my only issue with SmackDown is we don't see the stars that they have. We don't see Luke Harper, Eric Rowan. We don't see Mike Kanellis. He only been there 2 months. We don't see him.
When's Sami Zayn?
We see him.
Occasionally, I mean, it's got to be in a skit with Kevin.
And plenty of ones. Once again, it's a 2-hour show, so they literally can't put everybody on that show.
But you can't. But at the same time, you can't keep showing the same people every week all the time.
I mean, they try to mix and match it, but it's only so much you can do.
You see more Aiden English than Luke Harper.
Don't even get me started on that. Don't get me started. But I kind of appreciate it at the same time too, because they're trying to build somebody else up and not just the same.
Go talk about
them. No, here's another thing. I'm so tired of seeing triple threats and fatal four-way matches.
Tag matches.
Not even the tag matches. Just those fatal four-ways, triple threats, and fatal five-ways. I'm so tired of it.
I think they're starting to get to the point where they're trying to make people tune in weekly, but they're giving away great matches that could be on pay-per-view. Like the match before SummerSlam where it was
Cena and Nakamura.
That's a pay-per-view match. Like that's something. I mean, granted, back in the day, you got great matches on Raw and SmackDown that, you know, were pay-per-view caliber, but now the climate's changed, you know. You're not going to get a 60-minute Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, you know, being a match of your candidate on a SmackDown now. You're going to get something. You have to change, you know, with the times, but there are certain matches you do save for. I'm not a huge Roman fan. That's putting it lightly.
Oh, please say it. Say it.
This match should be at WrestleMania. This is almost an end. I mean, these are two eras going up against each other. This is something you put at a big flagship pay-per-view to put this at No Mercy. But
go ahead, jump
let
in.
Let me play devil's advocate with that, because I was listening to JR's podcast the other day. You know, and something that he said that is so different than the Attitude Era is, again, and this is another reason why the internet and the way all the shit that we know becomes a problem, because the fans want everything right now. They want it while it's hot. They want – and now you've got, instead of how it used to be back in the day where you would build it up until you finally get to the pay-per-view and then you just have one big blow-off. I mean – the fans have been pushing and pushing and pushing for that Braun Strowman Lesnar thing since Mania. And JR said, he goes, you know, even though the old school in me would say I would want that to happen at Mania, the fans are clamoring for it. So you got to strike while the iron's hot.
But you know, they had a couple of them that they're doing good, because, I mean, we've only seen them in the ring once with Nakamura and AJ Styles. And you know that's going to be...
Well, exactly, and that's what I'm saying. They're getting better.
Go ahead, jump in, Kev.
I said sometimes the build-up is so much... It's better than actual waiting on the match. Like, we'll get the match right away, the build-up be way much better.
Yeah.
Like, this Shane McMahon...
Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens thing that's going on. They building towards something.
That's
going
to be... And you have to look at who they're dealing with. I mean, Kevin... top, in my opinion, top three in the company. Shane has always stepped up.
Right.
I mean, he's not the greatest wrestler of all time. He takes a lot of big stunts, a lot of big bumps, but I've never not been entertained by a Shane McMahon match.
Well, let me bring something up. We're running short on time and bring something up real quick. We were talking about Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar,
damn,
right?
We didn't even go through the class.
We're getting a match at No Mercy. We're also going to get Roman Reigns versus John Cena. Personally, I think that's a huge mistake.
I agree.
I think they should have waited on Roman Reigns versus Cena, and I feel like that is going to overshadow Brock versus Lesnar, which is a match, like you just said, fans have been wanting to see that since Mania.
It's not the same pay-per-view, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they're both they're on the same.
Is that No Mercy?
They're on the same card.
Oh, I'm tripping.
They're on the same card.
Oh, no, I'm thinking one of them is SmackDown.
Yeah, no, Cena's on. Cena's a free agent. He can go wherever he wants. They signed the contract. It's going to be at No Mercy. So you're going to get basically two big four pay-per-view matches at No Mercy. And yeah, you still got to build up your other pay-per-views, but you're going to put both of them on here?
So which one is the main event?
There you go.
It's going to be Brock and Strowman, but it's
But who's to say that with these matches that you have to, you know, that's going to be the only time that they fight? Who's to say that there's not going to be some bullshit finish or something happens where they both knock each other out or some kind of shit where they keep it going. I mean, well, just because they have
the even the build up to it. I mean, that's if it happens again, it's not going to have the same feeling.
Hey, hands down, one of the best build ups so far. Like to me, last week Roman and Cena in the ring was one of the best moments I've seen. Man, I think it might be a Cena fan now.
when he said to Roman, this is a promo, son. If you want to be the big guy, you got to know how it feels. I'm like, oh, shit, that was off script. Because Roman really got flushed. I'm like, that's really Cena speaking to him. I'm like, oh, shit.
You're going
to
pull that golden shuffle, shovel. I'm like, ooh.
So that even though they haven't had but one, that or versus the Miz promos he had for WrestleMania?
No, they had two. Yeah, they did something yesterday, too.
They did?
Yeah.
I think at least at the end of it, I mean, at least it leaves us something to look forward to coming up. The other thing that I want to hit on before since we're running short on time, I want to talk about the Mae Young Classic, man, because they've got so – and this ties into what we were talking about with the women's revolution. Dude, they've got a crop of talent, and I took down a list of people that I personally hope get signed.
Yeah, run through them real quick, man. And we'll talk about it a lot more the next time we talk because it'll be after
So for me, I really like the Princess Suhei chick. I thought that was great. I thought Tessa Blanchard. Yeah. I thought Tessa Blanchard had one of the top two matches in the whole thing with Kairi Sane.
She's
I liked Rachel Evers or Rachel Elvering. I thought she was great. I liked Mia Yim. I liked Mercedes Martinez.
I like her. I like her.
Mercedes.
I like Tony Storm a lot too, dude.
She's got good person.
I know Kev liked Tony Storm.
Yeah.
Hell, I did too.
That's one of your picks.
Kev's really liked Australian girls.
Hey, I do too, bro. I really liked Abby Lath too, though. I thought she was different. I liked her look. I liked all of it. And I liked that her finish was something more simple. It wasn't like the big
clutch,
you know? Yeah. And I liked Kairi Sane. And the big one for me that I was so excited for coming into this is Shayna Baszler, dude.
Of course you're going to go with Shayna Baszler, bro.
I'm so happy that she's kept the whole MMA aspect. And also, the thing I liked about the whole series to me was that they kept a story going through it all. Each match kind of had its own little thing to it. Like, for instance, you had the Mercedes Martinez Shayna Baszler match. You had teacher versus student, mm-hmm. and they really played that out. Yeah. How they both kind of acted as though they knew what the other one was going to do. Kairi Sane, you know, in her match to get to the final. I mean, dude, she took a beating.
Yeah,
even off one of her own moves, her face is all swelled up.
That was one of the things I didn't like about the Mae Young Classic. You could kind of tell who's going to, if you were paying attention, you could kind of tell who's going to win.
I watched the bracketology and I'm like, no, she's going to win.
During the match. Yeah, because basically, if you were losing, you were getting your ass kicked and you made a comeback at the end. It started to get obvious at that point. Yeah.
Yeah,
so like you said, Kairi Sane got her. She literally got her ass whooped by Bianca Belair.
That was a great match.
I do too. She's already signed.
The whole thing with the braid—that's funny to me.
It is.
You don't see anybody else.
She
doing
literally
that.
Got her ass whipped throughout that match.
You know, and I mean, the thing of it is, like, okay, we can say that for a lot of matches. I mean, you got to remember, we all have been watching it for a while. But just sitting back and taking that all out of it, and just sitting back from a fan standpoint. I like the fact that there was a story to it. I like the fact that they were good matches. And I really just hope that especially with the – I really just hope with the way they've got NXT's kind of depleted in a way, they're bringing some of them up. There's so many – there's so much talent in this that they can bring up. I hope that they don't – especially when it comes to the second and third generation, the two that they have there with Tessa Blanchard and Rachel Elring. I just hope that because of their name that they don't not sign them because of that, because to me, dude, Tessa Blanchard damn near stole the show and she lost the match. Yeah. I mean, dude,
that's the one that shocked me.
She kept up with Kairi Sane move for move, and that senton she hit was dope. So in my opinion, we got a lot to look forward to, which is why, in my opinion, I don't think the women's revolution is dead.
All right, we're going to – we'll talk about more about that the next time when we come back in 2 weeks. But Kevin, Kyle, any last words about the Mae Young Classic or anything? Go with you, Kev.
Well, I enjoyed the tournament first so far. Like, I become a fan of some women that I never even heard of, seen, or heard anything about. And some of the people, like, I really was excited when I heard Candice LeRae was in there.
Oh, yeah.
So I got excited about that. But I'm a fan of Piper Nevin. And I was like, at first I wasn't.
I said this to you the other day. She's the white version of Nia Jax. Yeah. Like, I would love to see them fight, dude.
Yeah, the match with her and who she fought. Who was that? Last person she fought. I forgot.
Was it
It was Toni Storm.
No. It was Toni Storm. She gave Toni Storm a good fight.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
All right. Kyle, last words. So make it quick, man. We gotta do it. X's too.
I think that this is going to be a great thing for NXT because you looked at the way NXT's roster was. It was starting to get a little depleted by all the call-ups. I think that their women's division was pretty anchored pretty much by Asuka and Ember Moon. I think now that Asuka is going up to the main roster, if you look at who's going to be on there, that they're going to have a better class of women wrestlers than they've ever had in the company.
All right, everybody shut up. Show's almost over. Thank you all for listening to Knockouts and Three Cows. We're going to end it right there. Like I said, we'll talk about the Mae Young Classic a little bit more next time, and we'll have we're going to try to get a special guest for that one too. So make sure you follow us on Twitter at KO3CPod. And listen to All Stake No Sizzle. We're going to be out of here. Thank you all for listening. Bye.
Peace.
Thank you.